Thank you very much for the invitation. This is my first time to Perimeter, and it has been truly wonderful. With the added bonus that this morning we had a little unexpected input on some nice new anomalies that are sitting around. Today, what I'm going to talk about is something that we were thinking about in part because with the idea of naturalness kind of under fire, with no glaring new signals at the LHC, maybe it was time for us to think a little bit more about the biggest fine-tuning around that we know of, and that's associated with the cosmological constant problem. And we're trying to think about what possible experimental probes there might be that are novel associated with vacuum energy. And so this is this talk is based on work that I did with Brando Bellizzini, Csaba Csaki, John Turning, and Javi Serra in the following publication on the archive. Okay, so just as an introduction, we kind of have three individual kind of ideas that are all related. That is that of dark energy, its simplest model in terms of a cosmological constant, and its relations to quantum field theory. So the simplest model for dark energy is just a simple cosmological constant term, but the current value of that cosmological constant is very, very small, 10 to the minus 3 eV to the 4. And in light of this, we also generally expect that the microscopic origins of this cosmological constant have something to do with the vacuum energy of quantum field theory. And so the cosmological constant problem is, why is this number so small? So why is it not, for example, of order the weak scale to the fourth, or even considering microscopic contributions of order M Planck to the fourth? And if it is so small, why isn't it exactly zero? If there's truly some symmetry protecting this thing, why the small value and not a why not it just being vanishing? And so, in thinking a little bit about the vacuum energy in non-trivial configurations, say like high temperature or high densities, the vacuum energy actually changes. So if I have sort of an effective value of the cosmological constant, I can write it in terms of some bare term plus a bunch of contributions associated with various phase transitions as I proceed from very high temperatures down to very low temperatures, such that the effective vacuum energy that we're seeing now in terms of the cosmological constant is the sum of this bare term plus all of these dynamical contributions. So things like the Higgs condensate contribution to the vacuum energy, and also the QCD contribution to the effective cosmological constant. So the vacuum state, that is the arrangement of the field configurations, changes across high temperature or very high density phase transitions. And if no other dynamics are in play, our standard picture of how vacuum energy evolves is that the change in vacuum energy across each of these finite temperature or finite density phase transitions is going to be of order, say, the temperature associated with that phase transition raised to the fourth power.
Sorry, this is confusing a bit because we talk about energy density when you have, let's say, radiation, right?
Right. So there are many components to the equation of state.
Sure. Why do you single out these contributions? Because in principle, once I tune it somewhere, then all the rest I can think about thermal effective theory, I just tune it and forget it. I tune the bare thing. So why? My question is, why does the T to the fourth component have anything to do with the cosmological constant?
It's not obviously clear, but we'd like to have at least, is there some environment in which we can probe quantum field theory in a non-trivial phase? And in principle, if there's some dynamics associated with the vacuum energy, then these might be probes at high temperatures or high densities that could tell us a little bit more about the interaction of gravity with quantum field theory.
Why doesn't it be the end of that? Because it's not obvious that this has anything to do with gravity. This is my question.
Sure.
I agree with what you're saying, but I don't see the connection because this is a thermal field theory, right? So,
sure.
So I tune the bare SEC away, and then I'm left with excitations around this. This could be the thermal. If I look at BBN, I have same terms, right? Because the universe was radiation dominated.
Not really right at BBN, right? Why at BBN? There's no major phase transition.
No, there's no major phase transition, but there is a T to the fourth term, right?
Absolutely, right. But there's no term that looks like a vacuum energy term in terms of if I were able to perturbatively separate the various contributions,
yeah,
the equation of state.
The things that you're adding looks like a vacuum energy in a sense. I don't know, you talk about the temperature to the fourth term, so this is like...
I mean that the change in the vacuum energy at that phase transition is typically using NDA of order, the critical temperature associated with the phase transition raised to the fourth power. There are also radiation components as well on top of that, of course. So my effective equation of state is going to be a vacuum energy term plus some scaling T to the, so this is a constant piece, plus a term that scales like T to the fourth due to the presence of radiation on top of that. And so another question is, that component of the equation of state, how does that piece gravitate? It would be interesting to find a probe in which we try to distinguish how gravity is coupling to that piece of the matter density. But maybe
sure,
I should move on.
Sure, I cannot, yeah, because it's not clear at all, right? It doesn't have to gravitate any differently.
No, absolutely not. But in some potential resolution of the cosmological constant problem, gravity might not sense that part in the same way that it would in the standard picture. Right now I'm just trying to lay out, you know, what is the standard picture of what is the thermal evolution of our quantum field theory, the standard model, as I proceed from high temperature to low temperature. And there are vacuum energy-like contributions to the equation of state that appear as I go across high temperature phase transitions.
If you don't have a model, it's not obvious that anything will change. And if you have a model, then it will change everything, not just the electroweak phase transition. You will change the ordinary evolution of the universe, energy density, all the types of energy density will gravitate differently, right? In principle.
Right now, your model is a better model.
Yeah, I'm not going to present a model. In fact, I'm going to only look at, you know, very toy-like model toy-like models that could, in principle, apply to a variety of various different, you know, specific models for the vacuum energy problem, the cosmological constant problem. This is really kind of an experimentally focused style talk, where we just see what might the order of magnitude of the effect be of some BSM contribution that could affect the right-hand side of Einstein's equations that could in principle be related to the cosmological constant problem. Okay, so before the electroweak phase transition, the cosmological constant, again, is of order m weak to the fourth, mw to the fourth, and after electroweak, it's of order about lambda QCD to the fourth. So this is, in my mind, one of the more disturbing aspects of the cosmological constant problem, that if we are really to obtain this current small value, each phase transition really kind of has to anticipate the next upcoming one. So right after I pass the electroweak phase transition, the vacuum energy has to be just right so that when the QCD phase transition takes place, the final vacuum energy term or cosmological constant term is our current very small 10 to the minus 3 eV to the 4. And just to sort of repeat this, so at the electroweak phase transition, delta lambda electroweak, the change in the vacuum energy across that phase transition, lambda before plus this delta lambda, I just said this, is of order lambda QCD to the fourth. So at each phase transition, our quantum field theory is adding just the right amount to sum to our small current value. But in very early universe plasmas at high temperatures, the vacuum energy was huge. It didn't ever quite dominate the FRW scale factor evolution because the radiation component sort of outweighs it. But there's a question of, can I sense these larger values of the effective cosmological constant at these high temperatures? Or as I'll say later, at very high densities. So just sort of, what is our cartoon then of our standard evolution of the vacuum energy? We start off at some high temperature, and as we evolve down, we have some finite contribution of the vacuum energy here of order of electroweak. As I pass the electroweak phase transition, it dumps just the right amount of vacuum energy to get down to lambda QCD to the fourth, and then finally our very small value at low temperatures. And if you have something like Anthropics or a multiverse kind of explanation for the small value of the cosmological constant, this should really be kind of the picture you might have in mind for the evolution of the energy density and pressure densities as you evolve down in temperature. And there are also, of course, potential higher energy phase transitions. You could go through a SUSY phase transition, and the picture would be slightly different depending on what your high energy physics is. So a sort of a cartoon alternative to that evolution is that you might have something like an adjustment mechanism, where now as the temperature drops, the vacuum energy is always small due to this adjustment mechanism. And then as I cross each phase transition, maybe there's a little bit of a lag in how long the adjustment mechanism takes place to act and take that vacuum energy term and drive it down to zero. And so you get this picture where the effective vacuum energy jumps and then drops across each of these phase transitions. So at intermediate times, it's small. And then as I cross the phase transition, this is sort of the reaction of this adjustment mechanism.
But and this does not affect the radiation in any way.
Sorry?
It doesn't affect the radiation in any way.
No. In this picture, this is just a cartoon. I mean, if you hand me some specific mechanism, the picture could be different from this. This is not meant to be inclusive of all possible models for solving the cosmological constant problem.
Sorry. Let's say even there is some adjustment mechanism. Why would they take it during transition?
What? Sorry.
Why do they have them only during transition?
Because at each time the phase transition takes place, it's going to be dumping an amount of vacuum energy into the system that then the relaxation mechanism needs to respond to. So if there's some term in the equation of state that scales like vacuum energy, then this cartoon adjustment mechanism is reacting to that vacuum energy term as I cross the phase transition. So according to my picture before, each time the phase transition happens, it's trying to dump the amount of vacuum energy proportional to the critical temperature associated with the phase transition. And so each of these little peaks in the vacuum energy are associated with the dumping of that energy into the system, but then the relaxation of it by some sort of underlying dynamics that accomplishes this.
Wait, dumping energy means the drop on the left. Right.
No. The rise is due to the phase transition. So here's the phase transition right here. The vacuum energy jumps up, and then the relaxation mechanism drives it back down again.
So I guess I'm confused by why vacuum energy jumps up during transition, because it didn't happen before.
But it's out of equilibrium. Let's imagine yeah. It's out of equilibrium, and of course there's no model, right? In fact,
even
if
it's happening in quasi equilibrium at school.
Eh?
Even it's happening in quasi equilibrium.
What do you mean? It might still work?
As an adjustment mechanism with the adjustment mechanism.
Oh no, it could still go to zero. They are assuming that it doesn't, right? So there's some out of equilibrium, but there's some lag because the phase transition happens very fast and doesn't
yeah.
Have time to adjust.
And again, my focus is not on this picture. I can draw many different cartoons here. What I really want to ask is, how could I test, how could I distinguish something like this versus something like this? There's two very different pictures, and they have experimental consequences, and where might we be able to probe the difference between these two sort of cartoons?
See, the problem I have with this is that even the starting point, because if you have energy density that you're trying to dilute away, why are you affecting radiation? So this makes a huge assumption.
You want to push the energy into radiation.
Yeah, of course. No. But the question is, why don't you degradate radiation as well? Why? What mechanism knows the difference between a cosmological constant and radiation?
Yeah, I'm gonna stop the discussion on models, specific models, and just try to move on. And
this is what you're trying to push here, so I don't understand in principle what you're trying.
I mean, there could be a screening mechanism as well. Yes, so if I have some screening mechanism, maybe this is just always effectively zero. Maybe somehow at very long distances, there's a IR cutoff or something.
Why
yes.
Why does it screen the radiation? This is what I'm asking. Why doesn't it screen? You're making assumption about a model.
Well, the radiation would be some short distance physics, yes?
Right.
Anyway.
It's true. What do you mean?
He's at a disadvantage because he doesn't have a model to defend. I ask a question that, supposing your wildest dreams are successful, could you test it experimentally?
Right. That's the real point of this work,
well,
yeah.
This pitch would also mean that inflation might happen as well.
I don't want to. There's something else up there, inflation. I don't know. I don't want to speculate too much. I just want to draw a quick cartoon and say I want to distinguish between something like this and something like this. This is kind of our standard picture, and I want to have as a foil just some kind of straw man to toss up at it. I'm not going to even like test this specifically. I just want to say, you know, how much of an effect does the vacuum energy component in the standard model have? And would we be able to see naively the difference between that and some sort of BSM dynamics? Okay, so again, regardless of the plausibility of all the different models that have been tossed up to solve the cosmological constant problem, it's really crucial to test this vacuum energy experimentally. I mean, this is one of our biggest problems in particle physics, and we should really hit this with all we've got. And in order to do this, we want some novel probes of gravity and quantum field theory. In particular, looking at the interaction of gravity with quantum field theory when the vacuum is rearranged, and therefore this vacuum energy term, at least in the standard model, approaches is of the same order as, say, the radiation term or the other densities associated with the theory under those conditions. And so if those steps in the standard model picture are or are not confirmed, it really refutes large classes of models for dark energy. So we want to come up with laboratories to study this. So what's a layout of my goals? We want to propose some viable order my lifetime experimental tests of how whether quantum field theory vacuum energy enters into Einstein's equations. So what we want to do is we want to focus on phase transitions that are associated with significant rearrangement of field vacuum expectation values. So not like, you know, water freezing into ice or something like this, yes? So we want situations where the change in vacuum energy is of order a critical temperature to the fourth or perhaps some critical density to the fourth. And we want to search out phenomena that are sensitive to this delta lambda, these jumps. Now, in terms of how to get at distinguishing these scenarios, one of the main difficulties is that lambda is typically subdominant. If I have some large number of degrees of freedom around, then the radiation term typically weighs out over the vacuum energy term. And another difficulty is that our sort of closest phase transitions around in the standard model are weak. They're second order or crossover phenomena. And this means that in early universe phase transitions, you won't nucleate bubbles and get bubble collisions and things like this that could cause sort of larger signatures that could give you information about these steps. So what do we want? We want to find phenomena where the vacuum energy contributes at roughly an order one level, and sort of as an outline for the rest of the talk, I'll outline two scenarios that we thought of. There may be more. This is not necessarily exhaustive. And these two laboratories for studying vacuum energy we're proposing are in terms of the structure of neutron stars and also using primordial gravity waves. And so I'll talk first about neutron stars, and then I'll wrap up with a discussion about gravity waves sourced by inflation. So we're not neutron star experts. We sort of got from Wikipedia this picture of what a neutron star looks like. And it's got these sort of complicated things, these atmosphere, envelope, crust. But of primary interest to us is the structure that makes up the majority of the mass of the neutron star, i.e. an inner core and an outer core. And in terms of the phases associated with these cores inside the neutron star, at very high densities, QCD can hypothetically enter some exotic phases. So where do neutron stars live on the QCD phase diagram in terms of chemical potential and high temperature? Neutron stars seem to be able to straddle a potential phase transition between a nuclear superfluid, which is our current vacuum, and in a new vacuum associated with what's called this non-color flavor locked phase of QCD, or even perhaps in this color flavor locked phase. And so as you increase the chemical potential, there is a changeover in the quark condensates as I make the transition across this red line here. So at high densities, QCD enters these exotic phases. You can enter these non-trivial phases, and to emphasize, we have different condensates in this region inside that inner core of the star than QCD at zero temperature and zero chemical potential. And so the neutron star can straddle this phase boundary where we envision that the inner core is perhaps composed in part of this non-color flavor locked phase and partly the more standard nuclear superfluid phase.
There's a lot of latent heat in the difference between those two phases?
I think, according to best calculations, there isn't a big latent heat. This is another sort of second order crossover. So there's no surface tension associated with the jump across these two. But I'll lay out a little bit more details about how we treated this as we move on. So yes, neutron stars may contain cores that involve this exotic QCD matter, where the QFT vacuum energy we anticipate is much larger than the background cosmological constant. That is of order 100 MeV to the fourth. And of course, it's the equation of state of this stuff inside the neutron star that appears in Einstein's equations determining the pressure balance of the star. That is the static configuration, how much is made up of this non-CFL phase and how much is made up of this nuclear superfluid phase. And so details of neutron star properties like the mass versus radius curves and other properties of the star like its tidal deformability can be sensitive to this vacuum energy contribution to the equation of state. I'll note there was a somewhat similar proposal to test this aether theory that Niyayesh has been advocating over the last couple of years. To distinguish between this work and ours, we're really focusing on this jump in the phase between the nuclear superfluid phase and the non-CFL phase. So what is our toy model for neutron stars? We consider just two regions. We forget about this complicated outer stuff that doesn't compose that much of the mass of the star, that thin skin on the outside. And we now model these fluids, the nuclear superfluid and the inner core, as a polytropic equation of states, where in the inner core there's some vacuum energy component. And now we envision a transition between them at some critical pressure associated with the phase transition. And so there are some free parameters associated with these equation of states. We don't yet have theory input from these, but I'll lay out a bit more details in the next couple slides. So what we want to do is we want to calculate what are the stable solutions given these two phases of matter, this sort of two-component piecewise equation of state inside the neutron star. So we have our metric, we have the Einstein equations, aka for these static solutions, the Tolman-Oppenheimer-Volkoff equations, and the final equation in addition to Einstein's equations are the equation of state input, which we should provide as theorists to be able to understand what the dynamics of the star are. So we have some pressure as a function of the density. And the radius is, of course, determined now by the point where the pressure drops to zero as I move outwards from the center to the outside of the star. And the inner core radius, that is the size of the region that is in this non-color flavor locked phase, is going to be determined by when the pressure inside the star is equal to the critical pressure associated with the phase transition. And then we match the solution across this jump in the equation of state, where we assume, again, a second order or crossover phase transition associated with this change in the phase. And so we have that the mass and the quantity associated with the curvature in the metric and the pressure as a function of radius, these are all continuous parameters. So here's just our piecewise equation of state. We have a pressure on the inside core, pressure on the outside core, density on the inside core, density on the outside core, all valid for when I'm either greater or lesser than the critical pressure associated with the crossover to the color flavor locked phase.
What's the party line up here? If we were all neutron star people, what would we be expecting to be going on inside the neutron star? Because they must have thought through which phases are energetically allowed and same way you are.
Right.
And what's the story?
From looking at reviews, again, I'm not a neutron star expert. We went through this review article by James Latimer, and this seems to be roughly the picture there. You're typically stitching together a two-piece equation of state with a junction across, very similar to what I'm proposing here. I believe so. If there are neutron experts here, you know, please correct me at some point. But my understanding is that this is what it looks like, and I'll show actually a plot from LIGO where they're discussing their sensitivity to these equation of states, and they use precisely our kind of modeling this two piece stitched together hybrid equation of state. Yeah. Okay, so now in the inner core, what are the typical equation of states that are used in the party line, as I understand it? There's some polytropic equation of state plus a vacuum energy term. So this is often referred to as a bag parameter. And in terms of the equation of state, it appears just like a vacuum energy. So we have a pressure inside that has a pressure term that is unrelated to the vacuum energy term. And this part is the polytropic piece, is the polytropic equation of state. And then this is the vacuum energy term appearing in the pressure. And the density is given by the following. And then the outer core, it's a polytropic equation of state without this vacuum energy, because that is in our current low temperature, low density phase. So we just have a standard polytropic equation of state. And so we've chosen these equation of state parameters, these k's and gammas, to be in line with what, again, we see as the rough party line, where there's you have a nuclear superfluid in this outer core with a gamma of 5/3, and we take these k's in line with what we've seen in these reviews. And there are some theoretical limits on this vacuum energy term. If it's too large, then this non-CFL phase has a negative partial pressure. If it's too large and positive, you get a negative partial pressures. If it's too large and negative, you get no equilibrium solutions and no neutron stars. So there's some sort of basic constraints on how much you can play with this bag parameter or the effective vacuum energy term in the equation of state. And so now we go through and we turn the crank and we calculate the detailed balance for the neutron stars. And we now just see how much does, for example, the mass as a function of radius curves vary as I change the vacuum energy term or that bag parameter associated with the inner core equation of state. And so let's see, what are my different values? Sorry, this is a little bit hard to read. So if there were no vacuum energy term, that's black. If there were some mechanism that turned off that bag parameter as it appears on the right-hand side of Einstein's equations, then I'd get this black curve here. Whereas if I take this vacuum energy parameter to be roughly in line with what I'd expect using naive dimensional analysis, that is of order, say, 100 MeV or a couple hundred MeV, I can get significant deviations of these curves away from one another. So the radius can vary between 12 kilometers and roughly 6 or 7 kilometers out here, depending on how much I'm willing to play with this bag parameter.
How much does it vary depending on what you assume for these parameters?
Gamma. Oh, gamma. that I haven't played with. I can show you roughly maybe a little bit later in the talk, and I'll show you some of the different sort of posited equations of state from the LIGO plot. You can see sort of how much uncertainty there is from this theory side on where these equations of state fall, and they're very wide. So there's we really have a strong need to theoretically understand what's going on at high densities in QCD if you were to try to proceed with this as a true probe of vacuum energy. So I think part of my punchline is doing high density QCD has something to do with the cosmological constant problem. And so there's a strong motivation to pursue that. And so now when I say order my lifetime, there are all sorts of theoretical problems with going to QCD at very high densities. So maybe in, 35 years, we'll have made some progress on that.
This is possibly a bit confused, but I thought what you were trying to do was degravitate to the vacuum energy, not get rid of it altogether. I mean, so if you squeeze the bag a bit, then you still have, you just non-gravitationally, things interacting with the bag know about the sort of bag concept, know about the vacuum energy, so start pressing on it. But the question of whether it gravitates is the question of its gravitational attraction on the outer layers. So isn't that a bit different from just setting it to zero in a whole?
I think that would be effectively varying the critical pressure associated with the
exactly.
with the
so
jump. And so that is something we vary as well.
Yeah, sure.
Yes.
See,
right.
I guess we're asking the same thing. What's the degree of degeneracy?
Yes.
Because so you have to be able to distinguish that there is a component there that doesn't gravitate that has the equation of state of cosmological constant.
Because otherwise, this is just a weird equation of state interacting normally gravitationally.
Yeah. So this is what I guess we're asking. Given, what, for example, what type of precision on the parameters would you need in knowing the exact equation of state and all these jumps around in order to be able to tell the difference, for example, between 0 MeV and 50 MeV or 100 MeV?
We haven't varied the critical pressure in just the right amount to compensate for variations in the vacuum energy, but that would be something interesting to explore.
You're doing a single measurement. And in fact,
and the
energy density is energy density.
It's uncertain anyway, so you want to consider it.
The main
thing to gather from this plot is just that the effect can be very big. Yes, and it's not just an effect, but it's an order, 10 to 20% effect. That's the takeaway from this plot.
Sorry. One more question on that plot.
Yep.
It is assuming spherical symmetry, right?
Yes.
And also, is the stability of the solution in check, or just whether you can find solutions?
These are stable solutions. There's an unstable region if I continue this on the other side, which we've neglected to show. So, this is very typical of what these neutron star balance plots look like, these M of R curves.
So in principle, if you go beyond spherical symmetry, you can find a spin dependence on this too, that will provide you two.
Yeah, that's another thing. There are many different handles beyond just an M of R curve. So it may be in part again to adjust sort of degeneracy issues. There's not just this is one thing that I can measure on on a neutron star, but I can also get things like this tidal deformability. So if I have a neutron star pair and they're orbiting each other, they're squeezing each other, and they're the gravity wave signature sent off depends on that in addition to the M of R curve. So there are many sort of data points that you can in principle use to tease out possible degeneracies between this sort of dynamics and some sort of BSM contribution. Okay, and so also as I scan across here, you can see significant differences in the allowed maximum masses for neutron stars. So that's another handle you can get. So the vacuum energy can have a large effect on this maximum mass. For the various equations of state that we were looking at, this mass, the maximum mass varies by up to 20%. Throw it out there. There's some evidence apparently of supercritical neutron stars, and it's sensitive to the different possibilities for, again, this currently unknown equation of state.
Was the black line the one that we should think of as being the
black line is where I've did the more standard picture is say this red or this orange curve, and then the black line is a reference point. If I just set that term to zero, let's say that vacuum energy is totally screened, then I would get that curve. But again, I'm doing something very crude. I'm just looking at the vacuum energy term, and I'm leaving that polytropic equation of state alone, and just seeing how much difference do I get in these curves just by hand, crudely adjusting that vacuum energy term. And again, the takeaway point is that the effect is order one. And yes, that's right. Yep. So as I go from, again, this is sort of my naive expectation that as I go to high densities, I have some positive contribution to the vacuum energy term in that region inside the non-color flavor lock phase. And if I now adjust the vacuum energy term, taking it down to say zero or negative values, then the maximum masses typically go up. And the different curves here correspond, and I apologize again, it's not coming across too well, these are different values of the critical pressure. So we're, you know, in a few different plots, we varied things like the critical pressure and the vacuum energy term simultaneously on this plot. Okay, so in part to answer your question as well. So the effects of so this is the effect of varying this critical pressure and the vacuum energy at once.
So if you take the vacuum energy term to zero, it's effectively just one layer in neutron stuff, right? The two layer disappears.
If
you tune the vacuum energy contribution to zero, then there's actually no transition in the star.
Not necessarily, right? There's some critical pressure still at which I can accomplish the phase transition, and this is the vacuum energy term appearing in Einstein's equations. So where there may be some non-standard model dynamics that sets that effective vacuum energy term to zero.
I think that's another way of asking it. Your P of rho was different regardless of lambda, right? It was different phases.
My P of yes. That's right. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. There's a different polytropic index as I go from the outer core to the inner core. It's we're using 5/3 for the outer core and 1 for the inner core, and then some typical values for these k parameters associated with the polytropic equations of state. Okay. So what are our current limits on these M of R curves? So our most current measurements of the radius of these neutron stars come from studying the luminosity profiles of neutron stars that are accreting matter onto them and thus giving off some light. And again, it's not coming across very well. But if you take a look at these plots, which are in the Latimer review, for example, you can use these luminosity profiles to extract the radius of these neutron stars, which the radius is shown on the horizontal axes on these plots. And each of these plots corresponds to some different neutron star system. But the uncertainties in R are very large, so order 20 to 30%.
So those smears are for one system, the uncertainties in the
right? Right, so my interpretation is that these blobs are sort of the allowed region for the radius. But there are future probes of these different equations of state. For example, the advanced LIGO reach, and I pulled this plot from a paper by Lackey and Wade. And what you're looking at here is on these top two plots, these are looking at the M of R curves versus so this is the radius here and the mass. And each of these sort of colored blobs corresponds to the uncertainty that advanced LIGO can achieve in trying to get the M of R curve for these various different equations of state that are thrown at it. So this is not R 5/3 and 1. These are some various potential reasonable equations of state to use for the inner core and outer core respectively. Right, so each of these points here at different mass will have, at the same mass will have different radii, overall radii, depending on what the equations of state are in the outer and inner core, respectively. And so what they're doing is they're looking at these various different equations of state labeled by MST, H4. I don't know what each of these is necessarily, but the take-home point from their plot here is that their uncertainty bands, these colored regions here are relatively small, and you can distinguish between this equation of state and that equation of state. So again, if we had a theory input for what the equations of state are for the outer and inner cores, then that gives us a line that we're supposed to follow here. And then if we go ahead and perform this measurement and we find that we're way down here or way up here, then that is telling us something, that there is some non-trivial physics associated with the neutron star that could be potentially associated with the cosmological constant problem. And so on the bottom two plots, this is they're measuring another quantity associated with neutron stars, this tidal deformability. So they have many different handles on getting stuff out about the dynamics of the insides of these neutron stars. And so roughly the precision to which they can distinguish these equations of state looks to be roughly sort of 10% on the R axis here, given some particular M. And so you could distinguish, you know, then again, taking my plot that I showed before, where there's, you know, order 20% effect, you could be able to start to see it in these kinds of probes.
So these are different equations of statements they feel are plausible for QCD.
That's right. Yes, exactly.
So how likely is it that they'd be able to find something like your case where you have an equation of statements as well, have an effective behavior which is not like any plausible QCD equation of states? Because you have this screen vacuum energy.
So that's what I was.
Why are you able to detect that? Because all of these things are plausible QCD equations.
Right, right. And ours aren't too far off. So if you look at this axis, it's like, you know, 10 to 14 kilometers. And, you know, what we are getting. Yeah. Sorry. This is not sort of, you know, our stuff was, you know, maybe sort of 20%. So we'd be like, say, down here. Let's say that this is the right equation of state here. Then we'd be lying something like right here, potentially, if we just fudge with this this vacuum energy term. And again, that's not a model. You know, it's not a real model, but if you were to throw, you know, some your pet toy model for the vacuum energy problem, then you could, in principle, determine what exactly you're supposed to put in instead of the finite density QCD equation of state there.
But it does sound like there's a degeneracy, like you were saying, that your curve would be in there amongst these other curves.
Yeah, that's why I make it like it still sounds like within the range of plausible QCD curves, unless you get lucky.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. But the plausible QCD curves, there's a, you know, huge theoretical uncertainty that we don't know how to do QCD at high densities. Like on the lattice, it's very, very difficult. There's a sign problem, and they can't cram all these neutrons in there. It's, from what I understand, a real nightmare. And so what we need is some huge theoretical progress to say, this really is the right equation of state. This black curve right here, and now we go measure it. Are we departing from that or not? So it requires a theoretical breakthrough.
And
it,
things like probability probability is something you can use to break that degeneracy.
I would expect so. Yeah, I haven't looked into the details of the tidal deformability and how it would change things in our picture. But you see. And actually, the tidal deformability looks even better. So if I, you know, vary between these hypothetical equations of state, you know, there seems to be a larger window between many of these different curves. There seems to be a larger variation in that quantity.
But do you know if your curve is going to deviate from one of their curves? Because if your curve is in the broad band of colors but is not tracking one of the lines,
right,
then you'd have a hope of distinguishing it, right?
Even without the theoretical input.
Right.
So,
yeah. Right. Whereas if it's tracking one of the lines, then you're at some level, you need something else besides the measurement.
My naive expectation, I have no reason for why the line, if I, let's say I happen to agree with one of these lines here, I don't see any reason why that would mean I have to agree with the same line here. These are two physical quantities associated with different kinds of dynamics. And so I wouldn't expect them to overlap, but I haven't done it, so I won't say anything conclusive. Okay, so I just want to summarize, and then, okay, I have 10 minutes to do gravity waves. I think neutron stars are kind of the more promising of the two, so I think this is fine. So neutron stars, the point that I want to make is that they're great laboratories for the interaction between gravity and quantum field theory, particularly with this emphasis that it would be really nice to test things like the equivalence principle in a novel vacuum configuration of quantum field theory. This is something that we haven't done yet. So does this vacuum energy term in these exotic quark phases gravitate, or is there some BSM dynamics associated with it? So what we did was we looked at this modification of the equation of state by adding and subtracting vacuum energy, a very crude approximation to what some BSM dynamics might do, and it strongly affects the properties of neutron stars, so things like the mass radius curves, mass limits, and more. And again, we don't know this equation of state, so we need theory input in order to interpret this data. And again, this seems to be related in some way, potentially, to the cosmological constant problem. So there's a lot of payoff, I think, for that for getting that theoretical input. Okay, so so now I'll talk a little bit about primordial gravity waves. So we've looked so far at high density, but there are also high temperature probes where now I can think about, say, you know, QCD above the QCD crossover, confinement and chiral symmetry breaking transition, or the electroweak transition. And so what we have from primordial gravity waves, we have some metric perturbations that are sourced during inflation that are propagating then in our expanding universe. And as the universe evolves, the evolution of this scale factor is going to be determined by what the universe is doing at different epochs. So let's say I produce some flat spectrum of gravity waves during inflation. The features then in the evolution of the universe can imprint physics of what's going on at various phase transitions. So we do the usual, we consider transverse traceless metric perturbations, and we then have, you know, the Einstein equation for the scale factor evolution in conformal time, A double prime over A is related to the trace of the stress energy tensor. And that last bit is important, because if we then work out what the evolution equation is for rescaled modes, where chi is equal to the scale factor times the standard transverse traceless perturbations, we get an evolution equation for these chis that is just identical to the wave equation, but with the insertion of this evolution of the scale factor, A double prime over A, which again is related to the trace of the stress energy tensor. And so now there are roughly two scenarios associated with this wave equation. So if the wave number is much greater than A double prime over A, that is this trace term, then I can just forget about that, and we just have simple plane waves. But if we have that the fact that K squared is less than that trace, then the mode is effectively frozen and integrated out. And so the physics of the trace as a function of the history of the universe affects these perturbations. So we can calculate a transfer function associated with the propagation of these gravitational waves through the screen of the evolving scale factor. Now the metric is going to depend on the finite temperature equation of state of the standard model at the times that those gravitational waves are re-entering our cosmological horizon. So if we start from some approximately scale invariant spectrum from inflation, so where I have some primordial waves and I then relate them to the physics during inflation, if you have a very slow roll, then to a good approximation, the spectrum of waves as a function of wave number is flat. And now what we want to do is we want to take that and we want to propagate it in time in order to find out what the current density is as a function of wave number for these gravitational waves. Then we take that initial spectrum, and then there's a transfer function associated with the evolution of the waves through this evolving trace. So again, our typical transition, what we have is we have some radiation domination at high temperatures, and then as I approach this phase transition, then the vacuum energy starts to become a order one fraction of the total energy in the system at that moment, and we have these errors here right close to the phase transition where vacuum energy can have a contribution to the evolution of the scale factors. What we want to focus in on what happens to the primordial gravitational waves that are entering the horizon at the time when the universe is at these critical temperatures. So you know, across each of these phase transitions, of course, the number of relativistic freedom, the number of relativistic degrees of freedom is dropping as I proceed down lower and lower in temperature, and I integrate out more and more modes. And so what are the features that then get imprinted on the spectrum due to this non-trivial evolution? We can get things like spectral steps and also peaks in the gravitational wave spectrum for the waves that are entering during the epochs associated with those phase transitions. So if you calculate if you calculate roughly estimating these transfer functions for omega h as a function of k at high wave number, you have the spectrum is going to be proportional to the number of relativistic degrees of freedom in the system raised to the power of minus 1/3. And now if we now evolve across the phase transition, this parameter is going to drop. And so as we move across the phase transition, assuming entropy conservation, we generate a step. So omega before versus omega after is going to be related to the number of degrees of freedom in terms of the ratio of the number of relativistic degrees of freedom raised to the power 1/3. So from this, we see that a typical phase transition is going to generate a step with some sub-features. This is the rough, very coarse-grained thing, very far before the phase transition, very far after the phase transition. We're going to get a step in the spectrum. But during the phase transition, there can be some sub-features of this step that depend on details of the equation of state as you proceed across the phase transition. So now if I focus in on what the effect of a vacuum energy term might be. Now remember, the radiation doesn't contribute to the trace. So the trace is effectively zero from the radiation up to the conformal anomaly. So primarily, that trace is going to involve the vacuum energy term, which is going to hold those modes that are entering the horizon right at that time. And they won't damp like the plane waves will damp. And so depending on what the ratio is between the vacuum energy contribution and the radiation contribution to the energy density, you can get the fact that omega, as you're proceeding across the phase transition, is going to have the following scaling with this ratio C and the number of relativistic degrees of freedom. So what we have here is as G star is evolving, G star is dropping, but we have this C parameter rising. And so there's a competition between the change in the number of degrees of freedom and this vacuum energy component that can generate a peak in the spectrum as I move across the critical temperature. So again, so if we focus, for example, on the QCD phase transition, we recall that the gravity waves are sensitive to the trace. And if you look up what the trace anomaly is in QCD at finite temperature, this is a parameterization that is used in lattice fits to finite temperature QCD. So we have an overall t to the fourth scaling of the trace. And there's some parameters associated with how wide the transition are, how steep it is. And there's a matter-like contribution. And there is a vacuum energy-like contribution to the equation of state that emerges at high temperatures. And so this D4 parameterizes the size of the jump in the vacuum energy as I proceed across the chiral phase transition, the confinement transition. So D4 is like a vacuum energy term. The lattice data gives numerics, and indeed this D4 is of order lambda QCD to the fourth. And so as you change this D4, so let's do the kind of analog that we did with the neutron stars. Take that D4, make it small, make it big, see how much it affects the overall features of that step in the gravity wave spectrum as I look at modes that are entering the horizon either before or after the QCD phase transition. Then there is very small effect due to the effect of this D4. So it's not very promising. There's no peak from QCD, and the real reason for this is that the change in the number of relativistic degrees of freedom is huge across the phase transition. So that step is overwhelming the peak. The peak is trying to sit on a very big step, and it's just not very visible. Yeah.
So what are you holding fixed when you change D4?
What are we holding fixed when we change D4? Everything else for our purposes. It'll be a different contribution to the trace. Yes, this is just the trace of the energy momentum tensor.
Yeah, but I think that also means I'm just not sure if you change the component of the vacuum energy, but don't go back and check whether the photo energy is conserved. It's the same. It's probably not the same.
I mean, energy should. This is just a parameter that's read off from the lattice. I mean, energy should be conserved. Yes. that's not gonna change based on whether I'm just playing with this parameter. And even so, this is what I'm really what I'm doing here is I'm effectively changing the D4 that appears on the right hand side of Einstein's equation. I'm not changing the D4 necessarily associated with QCD on the lattice. So, and again, it's not I don't want you to take this completely seriously, except to say that what is the rough size of the effect of changing the equation of state that seems to be roughly related with the vacuum energy term. Here, it's not very big. I'll show one plot where there could be very sizable effects, but that requires some kind of specific idea for what the model for solving the cosmological constant problem is. So the large step is washing out the peak. So let's make a peak. Let's see, what do I have to do in order to get a feature in the spectrum that really stands out? So electroweak is similar. There's, again, a large change in the number of degrees of freedom as I cross over the electroweak transition. But if I consider some hypothetical very high-scale phase transition where I engineer my phase transition so that there is a large jump in vacuum energy but not a large jump in the number of degrees of freedom. So the model that we take is we have some idea of some global SUN symmetry breaking. There's a lot of degrees of freedom that become massless across this phase transition, so they actually stay in the thermal bath and don't change the number of effective degrees of freedom. So you only get a very small change in G star when you have this global symmetry breaking. So now we have the potential for that vacuum energy term to be significant in comparison to the step feature. And so we can generate nice peaks here. And so the various things here are looking at a couple of different models along these lines, where the scale here associated with the frequency is associated with a Pecci-Quinn-like scale, 10 to the 9 GeV, I think, is what we plugged in here. And you get similar results from other classes of Pecci-Quinn breaking that we considered.
Can I ask you, what happens to the shape of the, you're in a radiation-dominated universe. So
that's
what
right.
Happens if I have matter domination, if I have some other matter, because this is before BBN, so in fact, we don't know.
Right, yeah, no. So you'll get all kinds of stuff in these spectra, right? So if you have some early matter dominated era. A matter-dominated universe actually has a very different structure. There's if I start off with a flat spectrum from inflation, matter domination is going to give you a real line in the spectrum. It'll just be dropping down much faster, right? So that's very interesting, right? There are many other sort of interesting cosmologies that can imprint themselves on the gravitational wave spectrum. Yeah, absolutely. Independent of this idea. Okay, and I'm wrapping up here. So there could be, of course, be more exotic possibilities for how these phase transitions are taking place. Like, maybe the electroweak isn't actually a second order transition. That's what we calculate in the standard model, but there may be new degrees of freedom that we need to take into account. In addition, there could be, if there is some underlying mechanism, like, let's say, some sort of relaxation mechanism for the vacuum energy, there could be some time period associated with that relaxation. So what I've done here is just come up with a toy model of an alternative to the standard QCD phase transition, where we have some sort of a slow reacting adjustment mechanism. So as I proceed across the QCD phase transition, it initially dumps a bunch of vacuum energy into the system, creating a period of mini inflation following the QCD phase transition. And so what this will do is, if I have this inflationary epoch, it's going to really severely damp all of the modes that are already inside the cosmological horizon. So these modes here at high wave number that entered before the QCD phase transition will be driven down by a mini inflationary period that could be associated with an adjustment mechanism. So the modes inside are just going to scale like the initial A just before the transition divided by the final A to the fourth. That's how these gravity wave amplitudes will vary. And so now the step size, these different curves here correspond to varying this relaxation time. So you can get really serious features if you have some sort of specific alternative to the standard picture in mind. And of course, there are a bunch of experimental probes, most of them hypothetical at this point. But if you were looking at things like Desigo or BBO, you can start to probe strains that might be associated with phase transitions. So if I had some high temperature phase transition, say around the SUSY scale or something, they could lie right around here inside these windows that'll be probed by these experiments if they move forward. Again, this is an emphasis on my lifetime, 30, 35 years. Maybe these will be running and producing some data that are probing these. Sorry?
Do you know what AGA is? The one above this book.
That one I don't know, actually. I didn't look that one up. OK, so I've reached my conclusions. So to summarize, I want to emphasize that part of our standard picture of particle physics, that is, the stuff that we can calculate, is telling us that there are vacuum energy changes associated with various phase transitions in the standard model, things like the QCD in Electra Week or high-density QCD where I can produce these new phases of QCD. And so I looked at two potential laboratories for studying this. So neutron stars are one, where the vacuum energy is some significant fraction of the total mass of the neutron star. So if I have some dynamics in play that involve that vacuum energy term, then it can significantly affect the dynamics of the neutron star. So deviations in the M of R curves and potentially other physical quantities. And so the end punchline for that, I would say that it strongly motivates theory pursuit of that equation of state and, of course, precision measurements of neutron stars. So for gravitational waves, I've said that these dynamics could have a rather dramatic effect. So things like inflation or maybe perhaps a peak at a high scale phase transition. And also it points at the need that we need to have some complete picture of what electroweak physics actually looks like. So if there was something like a first order transition instead of a second order, that would create even more novel signatures that I've gone through here. You could generate gravitational waves during the electroweak phase transition that again could be probes of this. And this is something we were thinking about doing as a follow up. So this provides some additional strong motivation for the gravity wave experimental programs. Again, you can tie it into possible resolutions to the cosmological constant problem. Okay, thank you.
We've got lots of questions, but maybe we have time for one more present one. If not, then let's thank the
speaker. Okay.